Hello, this is Dave with the News Gazette for Sunday, January 12th, 2025. We'll begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined, Tragic Turn, Muhammad Triple Murder. Fight, lawsuit, link victim, alleged killer, who were roommates in college. It's Muhammad. What does a 2022 fistfight between two angry University of Illinois roommates have to do with a December 18 triple murder in Muhammad and the subsequent fatal shooting of the gunman by Berwyn police? Probably everything. Although it's impossible to state for certain because the two people involved, 23-year-old Caleb Mason of Muhammad and 24-year-old John R. Lyons of Westchester, are deceased. Lyons allegedly shot and killed Mason, as well as Mason's mother and sister, on the evening of December 18th at Mason's home in Muhammad. Lyons was killed later that evening after he attempted to force his way into two residences in Berwyn and then engaged in a shootout with police. The shooting occurred after Lyons, looking for Mason, had stopped at the Mason residence for the third time that evening. Finally, encountering Mason as he pulled his vehicle into the family garage. Authorities said Lyons shot Mason while he was still in his vehicle. He then shot Mason's mother, 61-year-old Janice Mason, and sister, 26-year-old Sarah Mason, before fleeing the scene. Although mortally wounded, Caleb Mason managed to alert authorities by calling 911. 2 hours later, Lyons was fatally shot by Berwyn police. The incidents are so bizarre as to raise questions about Lyons' mental health and intent that evening. He clearly was on a murderous rampage, but his actions were so violent as to suggest a revenge and suicide by cop scenario. Lyons himself raised speculation about his mental health in a June 14th lawsuit he filed against Caleb Mason in Champaign County. The litigation stemmed from a June 18th, 2022 fight at the apartment they shared on the 300 block of East Armory Street in Champaign. Two roommates battered each other during an argument. No arrests at this time, police stated in a report. The fisticuffs were one-sided, Lyons taking a beating that required hospitalization. Lyons later wrote in a lawsuit he filed himself that the injuries he sustained, quote, hindered and prevented him from attending to his usual duties and affairs in life, unquote. John sustained pain and anguish both in mind and body, he wrote in his lawsuit. The lawsuit is itself unusual. Lyons prepared the complaint without the assistance of a lawyer, specified only his desire to be paid large sums of money by Mason, and took no steps to ensure that Mason was given legal notice. Mr. Mason, the defendant, was never served with this complaint. However, he came in to ask for copies and paid for them on July 11th and 12th, said Champaign County Circuit Clerk Susan McGrath. The University of Illinois admissions records show that Lyons enrolled at the U of I in fall 2019 and graduated in fall 2021 with a degree in information sciences. The U of I said Mason was a student from fall 2019 to the summer of 2022. He studied kinesiology, but did not graduate. Ultimately, they ended up sharing an apartment. Caleb Mason told police in 2022 that he never had an issue with Lyons, although Mason was aware that Lyons would be periodically annoyed with him for his lack of cleanliness. Circumstances apparently came to a head on June 18, 2022, when Lyons, planning to move, came to the apartment to collect his property. Finding his computer monitor and other items missing, Lyons accused Mason of stealing them. Mason denied any thefts and offered for John to look through his room. The bickering continued until Lyons prepared to leave. According to Lyons' version of events, he told Mason he was one of the worst roommates I've ever had. "You're a pig," he said. Mason responded. Lyons said, "By daring Lyons to say that to my face." One thing led to another until the two men broke out into a full-scale fight in which each tried to choke the other. This continued for approximately 5 minutes, and Mason eventually told Lyons to leave, police stated. After Lyons left the apartment, he told his father, Robert, who was waiting outside, what had occurred. The father called 911 while his son was eventually taken to the hospital by ambulance. The state's attorney's office did not file any criminal charges, concluding the melee was a case of mutual combat. Both Mason and Lyons professed to be the victim of unprovoked violence. Mason told police that he was so scared for his life that he soiled himself. He said he changed clothes before talking to police. Flash forward 2 years when Lyons, obviously brooding about what he said were his extensive injuries, filed his lawsuit. Lyons acknowledged in his filing that the two men engaged in a brief verbal disagreement, but he contended he attempted to leave the apartment when Mason grabbed and punched him before pushing him to the ground and choking him to the point of unconsciousness. There was never any formal legal action taken as a result of Lyons' lawsuit. The lawsuit was just sitting there because Lyons never did anything to move it forward, McGrath said. 6 months later, however, Lyons showed up on the Mason family doorstep asking to speak to his former roommate. He made an odd appearance, wearing a motorcycle helmet but not driving a motorcycle. When Lyons showed up at a Berwyn residence, presumably looking for another victim, he was also wearing a motorcycle helmet. Video showed he carried a handgun in his right hand and placed a crossbow on a porch landing to his left. There was one resident of the Mason residence who survived the shooting, a so far unidentified man who lived in the basement and spoke to Lyons when he arrived to speak with Caleb Mason. Lyons' odd appearance and manner was sufficient to unnerve both the unidentified resident and Sarah Mason. She sent out tweets expressing alarm. "Try not to be scared, white woman, about the dude waiting outside of my house for a while now, wanting to speak to my brother while wearing a motorcycle helmet, driving in a car," she posted at 9:22 p.m. A few minutes later, she tweeted again, "He like left, but will probably be back anyway." About 20 minutes later, police were called to the scene and discovered the carnage. After the shootings, Lyons apparently drove to Berwyn, where he showed up about 11:40 p.m. on the doorstep of a controversial conservative political streamer who had been targeted for harassment after posting what many considered a distasteful online message. The resident, Nick Fuentes, declined to answer the door. "Yo, Nick," Lyons called. Fuentes later told police that he believed Lyons intended to kill him. The gunman carried a pistol, a crossbow, and incendiary devices, he said. Fuentes' 911 call, however, brought police to the scene and prompted Lyons' effort to flee. Berwyn police said Lyons tried to force his way into a neighboring house, firing multiple shots that missed a resident but killed two dogs. Officers then observed the offender fleeing eastbound into a yard on the 1800 block of Home Avenue. The subject disobeyed the officer's verbal commands to stop and proceeded to shoot at police officers. Berwyn police officers returned fire and fatally struck the subject, police said. Lyons' family members have declined to make any public statements about what occurred. Robert Lyons, a top official in the DuPage County State's Attorney's Office, has declined to speak about the matter, but he arranged for a spokesman, Chicago lawyer Peter Flowers, to respond to limited questions. Flowers said the Lyons family was unaware of any problems their son was having. They were shocked and horrified when they woke up in the morning and heard about this, Flowers said. They're mourning everyone affected by this. Beyond that, they're not going to go into the kid's life story, he said. Because there are two crime scenes, one in Mahomet and the other in Berwyn, the investigation is being conducted by Illinois State Police investigators in Central Illinois and Chicago. In addition to the criminal investigation in Mahomet, the State Police's Integrity Unit is examining what it calls an officer-involved shooting in Berwyn. Continuing on the front page with the opinion of Tom Kasich, titled, Great Orator Bryan Visited CU Just Before His Last Battle. This speech at Champaign Church came 1 month ahead of joining the prosecution in Scope's monkey trial. He recalled that he had spoken in Champaign before, but the June 1925 speech by three-time presidential candidate William Jennings Bryan was his most significant and certainly his most timely here. His approximately 90-minute address at First Methodist Episcopal Church, now known as First United Methodist, and still standing today at 210 West Church Street, came just 5 weeks before the start of the famous John T. Scopes monkey trial in Tennessee, and 6 weeks before Bryan's untimely death. Bryan, a Democrat born in Salem, spent his first quarter century in Illinois, but he later moved to Nebraska, from where he was elected to Congress in 1890. He was reelected in 1892 and ran unsuccessfully for the Senate in 1894. Over the next 2 years, the famed populist orator raised his national profile by giving up his law practice and speaking mostly about his plan to get the United States off the gold standard and onto the notion of free silver, which would have expanded the money supply and harmed the moneyed interests on the East Coast. By 1896, Bryan's popularity, based mostly on his exceptional speaking ability and his populism, he became known as the Great Commoner, grew enough that at 36 years of age, he became the Democratic nominee for president. He lost to William McKinley that year, as well as the 1900 election. He was nominated again in 1908, but lost to William Howard Taft. Thus, he became only the second man to lose three presidential elections. Henry Clay was the first. He also joins Donald Trump as the only man to lose Champaign County in three presidential elections. Unlike Trump, however, Bryan once got more than 40% of the vote here in 1896. Bryan opened his remarks in Champaign on that June night almost 100 years ago by noting that he had spoken in the city 45 years earlier on behalf of a congressional candidate. He actually had been in Champaign twice before, in 1879 and in 1896, the latter as a presidential contender for a brief campaign speech from atop a freight car at the Illinois Central Railroad Depot. There were perhaps 2,000 or 3,000 people packed into the open space on the north side of the Central Freight House, the Champaign Daily Gazette reported on July 14, 1896, and there was not so much of a jam that they could not all see and hear distinctly the boy orator of the Platte, as they delight to call Bryan out in Nebraska. This time, another 2,000 people crammed into the church in downtown Champaign, described in one newspaper story as sweltering, with even the standing room filled. Half again, as many people were unable to enter the church and either left or stood outside. The News Gazette reported, weather records say the high that day was 83 degrees. Fans worked hard all evening to stir up the atmosphere somewhat, the Urbana Courier said, and the venerable lecturer consumed the largest portion of a pitcher of ice water during his address. In the past, Bryan had promoted all sorts of progressive ideas, women's suffrage, a federal income tax, direct election of U.S. senators, state-owned railroads and utilities, federal spending on roads and education. But by this time in his life, he was more focused on issues like prohibition, he supported it as early as 1910, religion, and Darwinism. His address in Champaign was a preview of what he would argue in court a month later at the Scopes trial. John T. Scopes, a substitute biology teacher at a Dayton, Tennessee high school, was accused of violating Tennessee law by teaching the theory of evolution. Bryan was happy to join the prosecution team. Scopes was defended by another Illinoisan, Clarence Darrow, who was born in Ohio and spent most of his adult life in Chicago. Bryan attacked the scientist who promoted evolution and the newspapers that belittled him for his religious views. The city newspapers, at least some of them, are finding out that the Tennessee case is not a joke, but the beginning of the end of attacks upon the Bible by those teachers in the public schools who have been substituting the guesses of scientists for the Word of God, he said. He said that Scopes should be free to believe what he wanted to believe and express those views, but not in a public school where his beliefs were contrary to state and local laws. A man cannot demand a salary for saying what his employers do not want said, and he cannot require his employers to furnish an audience of children or young people when he wants to say what the parents do not want said, Bryan told the Champaign church crowd. The duty of a parent to protect his children is more sacred than the right of a teacher to speak, especially to teach what parents do not want taught when the speaker demands pay for his teaching and insists on being furnished an audience to talk to. Bryan called evolution the most brutal and cruel doctrine ever invented and promulgated by man. It teaches the barbarous law of the survival of the fittest, that might makes right, and upholds that very principle against which America fought in World War I. Slightly more than a month later, from July 10th to the 25th, the Scopes trial grabbed the attention of the nation. It was an unorthodox proceeding in so many ways. First, it was broadcast live by Chicago radio station WGN, the first time any trial had been carried by a radio station. WGN reportedly spent $1,000 a day, or about $18,000 in today's dollars, to lease telephone cable between Chicago and Dayton. The judge, John T. Ralston, allowed the station to place four microphones throughout the courtroom and permitted an announcer to sit near a window and offer remarks about the proceedings. Ralston prohibited testimony from experts in theology and the natural sciences. On another trial day, Ralston claimed he was concerned about the weight of all the people in the courtroom and the structural integrity of the building, so he moved the trial outside. More likely, it was said he wanted a cooler place to conduct the proceedings. Benches were set up for the audience, and platforms were erected to make it easier for photographers to get images of the principals, including the judge. Townspeople strung banners across the courthouse and the outdoor toilets on the courthouse lawn with the words, "Read your Bible." Scopes was found guilty by the jury. The judge later posed for a photo with the jurors and fined $100, about $1,800 today, by Ralston. Bryan offered to pay the fine, as did the American Civil Liberties Union. 2 years later, the Tennessee Supreme Court reversed the conviction, on the technicality that Ralston was not permitted to hand down a fine of more than $50. The High Court threw out the entire case, remarking, "Nothing is to be gained by prolonging this bizarre case." Scopes left teaching and later became a petroleum engineer. Darrow, at one time voted the most famous lawyer in America, died in 1938. Brian passed away in Dayton 5 days after the conclusion of the Scopes trial. He was 65. The United Press Dispatch from Dayton read, "William Jennings Bryan, the Crusader, grim of feature in death as he was in life, rests today in the camp of his friends and followers here, the victim of his last great battle." A lasting tribute to Bryan exists in Dayton, where William Jennings Bryan University opened its doors in 1930. The private Christian college is now known as Bryan College. And continuing inside the front page, at top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rossow. "If starring for the Illini and playing nearly a decade in the NFL didn't cement Fred Wakefield's celebrity status in his hometown of Tuscola, a menu item at Warrior Pub did the trick. The Wakefield comes with ham, turkey, roast beef, bacon, cheese, lettuce, tomato, and mayonnaise on white bread and runs $10. It's one of 15 offerings named after former Tuscola standouts, courtesy owner Jeff Buckler. Who knows how important high school sports are in this Douglas County community? I love the concept, and there are some really great names on there. People who had a really great impact on Tuscola sports over the years," Wakefield said. "I'm always happy to see people are hanging on to tradition and honoring the past. There's the Hoey Triple Patty Western Burger," compliments of Kelsey Hoey, "Metheny Grilled Tenderloin," Linda Metheny, "Scribner Cheesesteak" for Josh Scribner, "Williams Breaded Chicken Sandwich" for Alyssa Williams, and "Winky Classic BLT," John Winky, Boyd Henderson, Brock Wynn, Travis Skinner, TJ Onstott, Charles Earl, and Brent Higgins, the last Warrior mascot, also have sandwiches in their name. So do three families, Bates, Hanner, and Ring. Toby Ring, who lives in Tuscola, laughed that the Ringo Burger, named after him, Shane, Kara, Larry, and Kathy, is the top menu item. He also admits to ordering and enjoying it during his frequent visits to the South Washington Street restaurant. "Does it make me famous? Not at all," Toby said, "but it is kind of cool." And in history, area history, in 1925, Jack Kramer is in the Champaign jail waiting a hearing on a housebreaking charge after he was arrested by Champaign police in the home of T.J. Paisley of Champaign. A roomer at the Paisley home, Ralph Groff, was returning to the house when he noticed the dining room window was open, and even while he watched, someone closed the curtain. Entering the house, Groff tackled a dark figure that stepped out of the dining room and sat on him while family called the police. In 2010, faculty leaders are urging their colleagues at the University of Illinois to spare students as they decide how to take 4 furlough days this semester. International history, today's highlight: on January 11, 1908, President Theodore Roosevelt leveraged the Antiquities Act of 1906 to proclaim the Grand Canyon as a national monument. It would become a national park in 1919. On this date in 1861, Alabama became the 4th state to declare its secession from the Union. In 1964, U.S. Surgeon General Luther Terry issued Smoking and Health, a report that concluded that cigarette smoking contributes substantially to mortality from certain specific diseases and to the overall death rate. In 2002, the first Al-Qaeda prisoners from Afghanistan arrived at the U.S. military's Guantanamo Bay detention camp in Cuba. In 2010, Mark McGuire admitted to the Associated Press that he'd used steroids and human growth hormone when he broke baseball's home run record in 1998. And from Kathy's mailbag, among the questions asked, are electric vehicles required to display front license plates if they're licensed in Illinois? The EVs I've seen around town don't come with a frame or pre-drilled mounting holes, and I understand dealers don't want to mess with them. The Illinois Vehicle Code requires all vehicles registered in Illinois to display both a front and rear plate, said Max Walczyk, communications manager with the Illinois Secretary of State's office. There is no exemption for electric vehicles. This requirement helps ensure that vehicles are easy to identify in emergency situations and to assist law enforcement and victims involving crimes or traffic accidents, he said. Walczyk said some vehicles are manufactured without a front plate holder, but most dealerships and repair shops will install a front plate holder if asked. Failing to display a front and rear plate, including placing a plate on the interior dashboard or affixing one on the rear window, is illegal and carries a $164 fine, he said. Continuing with Kathy's mailbag, the question is, what are some of the most unusual discards local road crews have picked up from the side of the road? And how much do they spend on roadside cleanups? I polled several road highway engineers from around the area, and they said most of the stuff crew members pick up is, well, pretty ordinary. Chris Kester with Champaign Public Works said, "We don't keep track of any items, but they have ranged from furniture to clothes to regular bags of trash." He said Public Works staff in Champaign routinely pick up illegally dumped materials, litter, and dead animals, and dispose of them by a landfill. "We currently have a contracted disposal rate amount of $88 per ton," he said, "and in the past 3 years, we have spent as low as $68,000 and as much as $128,000 in the disposal of street debris. Near residential areas, we will pick up the roadkill and haul it to a location where we can bury it, either in the ground or beneath wood chips, mulch," he added. "Now individuals have to pay big dollars to dispose of any electronics, appliances with refrigerant in it, and shingle tear-offs. Individuals will pull into field entrances at night and dump piles of stuff illegally," Garnett said. That's all we have time for. I'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour for the News Gazette for Sunday, January 12, 2025. Please stay tuned.